turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. We are almost to the place where we're going to start to wrap up the story of the life of Abraham and, of course, his wife Sarah. And, of course, that is how this week's Torah portion begins, because as it begins, Sarah has ended her life. So the parsha is called Chaye Sarah. The place where we want to turn is chapter 23 of the book of Bereshit, or Genesis. And it says, Chaye Sarah, and the life of Sarah was 127 years. These were the life, the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died in Kiriat Arba, the same place as also Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And then what we're going to get, and this is, let me pause here and remind folks, now some of you that have heard me teach this before know that I always have thought this was a fascinating, very interesting, and very, very important Torah portion, because there is more about the real law, the common law, the things that are the basis of so much of English common law, and that were passed down through Blackstone's commentaries and so forth. The very basis for most of the elements are here. And they're not in the form of commandments or statutes, judgments, and commandments, as you know. They are in the form of the story, a precedent that is set. And the precedent covers literally almost all of the most important elements of the common law, from contracts to what's called agency, or what it means to come in the power of attorney of or in the name of, to marriage. And we'll talk about all of those in just this one portion. All right, so that's where we start. Abraham rose up from before his dead, and he spoke to the Hittites, the children of Heth. And he said, I'm a stranger and a sojourner with you. Give me possession of a burying place with you, that I might bury my dead out of my sight. So he goes to the children of Heth, and he asks that they sell him a plot, or bigger, as it turns out. And the children of Heth answered Abraham, and they said unto him, Hear us, my lord. Hey, you're a mighty prince among us. In the choice of our sepulchres, you bury your dead. None of us will withhold from you his sepulchre, but that you might bury your dead. So they're going to give him something. No strings attached. Yeah, well, probably. And just go ahead and do it. Now, he knows better than that. And more importantly, there is a real, real underlying method and theme here that, again, lays out those precedents. So Abraham rose up. He bowed down. He was very, what's the word? He supplicated himself. He bowed down before the people of the land, even to the children of Heth. And he spoke to them, and he said, If it be in your mind that I should bury my dead out of my sight, hear me. So basically, he has a request. Entreat for me to Ephron, the son of Zohar, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he has. And by the way, that word literally means double, which is in the end of his field. For the full price, let him give it to me in the midst of you for a possession of a burying place. So he wants to pay for it. Now, Ephron was sitting there in the midst of the children of Heth, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of all the children of Heth. Notice how it's going to mention that several times. In the hearing of witnesses, even of all that went into the gate of the city. So those were the elders, literally, of the place. And he said, No, no, my lord, hear me. The field that I give to you, I just give it to you. And the cave that's therein, I give it to you in the presence of the sons of my people. I give it to you. Bury your dead. Abraham bowed down. He's still very, very, I'm still not coming up with the word I'm looking for. Humble. There you go. And he bows down before the people of the land. And he spoke to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land. That's the second time we've heard in the hearing of the people. So all of this is happening before witnesses. Key. He says, Look, if you will, I pray you hear me. I will give you the price of the field. Take it from me, and I'll bury my dead there. Now, at this point, Ephron gets a little bit shady, I guess we would say. He answered Abraham, and he said unto him, My lord, hearken unto me. That piece of land is worth 400 shekels of silver, which is an obnoxiously ridiculous price for the time. What is that between you and me? Bury your dead, therefore. All right? He names a price that is way out of sight. But notice, here is the key. This is the key from the common law. It's called offer. He made an offer. He named a price. What does Abraham do? He accepts it right then and right there. Oh, yeah, and in front of the witnesses. And Abraham hearkened. He shamarred. He listened and obeyed unto Ephron. And Abraham weighed. He just weighed out the silver right there, which he had named in the hearing of the children of Heth. There it is, witnesses. 400 shekels of silver of kesef. That word, of course, means both money, but more importantly, silver, because silver is money. Current silver, money of trade with the merchants. So what Scripture is telling us is this is, in fact, the currency of the time. It's honest weights and measures. We have seen now all of the elements of contract, offer and acceptance and compensation, as you'll see it in any common law textbook, or at least you used to when this was taught, and right out of Blackstone's commentaries on the common law, the contract is done. He has there's been offer, there's been acceptance, he has paid for it, and it's been done with honest weights and measures. And it's been made very clear, and it's been done in the presence of witnesses. So, the field of Ephron, which was in Machpelah, which was before Mamre the field, and the cave that was in it, and all the trees in the field, and all that were in the border round about, were made sure. They were recorded, we would say now. Literally, it was the equivalent of, it's a done deal. Unto Abraham for possession in the presence of the children of Heth, before all that went in at the gate of his city. So everything about this, the gate of the city is the place where these legal transactions and decisions are made. That's where it was done. It was done in all of these ways. And Scripture has now outlined for all time this example of what a contract looks like with offer and acceptance. After this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, the same as Hebron, and the land of Canaan. And that field and the cave that is therein were made sure unto Abraham for possession of a burying place by the children of Heth. Now notice that, ironically even, this is the only part of the land that is actually registered to and made sure to Abraham during his mortal life. Chapter begins, the next one, 24, with Abraham was old, well stricken in age, and Yahuwah had blessed Abraham with everything, in all things. And Abraham said to his servant, the elder of his house, now notice his servant, we've heard the name before, we think the name that is referred to here is Eliezer, but you'll notice very explicitly, and I think it's absolutely deliberate, that servant is never, not once in this whole chapter, in this whole story, he is never referred to by name. He is always just the servant. Now, I'll suggest to you up front, what we're going to see here is not only was the servant here, he was the good and faithful servant because he did precisely what he was told to. That is the key. And, of course, we're going to know that that is what we all aspire to. So here is a really good precedent example for us to take a look at. So Abraham said to his servant, the elder of his house, and that pretty well describes it, doesn't it? That guy that ruled over all that he had, put, I pray you, your hand under my thigh. All right, so what's handing, this is maybe seems a little bit tacky to modern sensitivities. This is a guy being told, put your hand under my private parts. All right, take a hold of my private parts, just so we're clear here, this is serious business that we're getting down to. And I want to make sure you're paying attention. So he is going to ask his servant to swear, and he will. And he says that, I'll make you swear by Yahuwah, the Elohim of heaven and the God of all the earth, that you shall not take a wife for my son from among the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. Find a good one. Find a better bloodline, not one of these Canaanites. But instead, you shall go unto my country, to my kin, take a wife for my son, even for Yitzhak, Isaac in the English. And the servant said unto him, well, look, suppose that woman won't be willing to follow me unto this land. It's a long trip, right? Take some kind of special woman that wants to get on a camel and ride for, a week and a half to go a long, long, long ways. And a place that she's obviously never been before. Leave her family and everything else. Must I needs bring your son back unto the land from whence we came? In other words, suppose I need to take your son up there in order to make this happen. Abraham says unto him, beware that you not bring my son back up there. Nope, he ain't going up there. Yahuwah, Elohim of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my nativity, and who spoke to me and who swore unto me, saying, unto your seed will I give this land, he will send his messenger, his malach, before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. Now, if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you'll be clear from this oath. Only you shall not bring my son back up there. So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and he swore to him concerning this matter. Now the servant then took 10 camels, the camels of his master, and he departed. Now notice, he is taking a whole caravan with him. Some of that for the obvious reason of security in numbers, and probably some armed parties with him, because there would be highwaymen and others that might threaten, especially if he's got lots of stuff on board with him, and people that might be watching might know that. So he's a target. So 10 camels, and of course a lot of the camels are going to carry stuff too. And he needs camels to be able to bring her back. So the servant took 10 camels, again, it's the servant, the camels of his master, and he departed, having all goodly things of his master's in his hand. And he arose, and he went to Aram Naharaim, under the city of Nahor. And he made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at the time of the evening. So, it's time to water the camels, and at the time that women go out to draw water. And he said, O Yahuwah, Elohim of my master Abraham, send me, I pray you, good speed this day, and show kindness, not to me, unto my master Abraham. Behold, I stand by the fountain of water, and the daughters of the men of the city come to draw water. So, here he is going to ask a question, and essentially lay out a prayer of how will I recognize the woman that is going to be the wife. And he's going to pick something which essentially is not very likely to happen by chance. As a matter of fact, I'd say not at all, even remotely possible, to happen without divine intervention. So let it come to pass that the damsel to whom I say, let down your pitcher, I pray you, that I might drink. And she, in turn, will say, drink. And not only that, I'll give your camels water too. Let the same be she that you have appointed for thy servant, even for Isaac. And thereby I shall know that you have shown kindness unto my master. So here is a test by which I will know that you have selected this woman. So it came to pass, before he was even done speaking, behold, here comes Rivka. Rebecca in some English renderings, of course, but Rivka in the Hebrew, who was born to Betuel, son of Milcah, wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother. And she's got her pitcher upon her shoulder. The damsel was very fair to look upon, so she's good-looking, a virgin, neither had any man known her, so we're making that doubly clear. She went down to the fountain and filled her pitcher, and she came up. So that word, let's see here, in the Hebrew is a Betula. Virgin, she has not known man. And the servant ran out to meet her, and he said, give me, I pray you, some water to drink, a little water out of your pitcher. And she said, drink, my lord. And she hastened, and she let down her pitcher upon her hand, and she gave him water to drink. And then when she was done giving him water to drink, she said, look at this, out of nowhere, or maybe out of somewhere we know, I will also draw water for your camels, till they have been done drinking. She just volunteered to spend probably an hour for a guy she does not know watering 10 camels, and camels drink a heck of a lot of water. We'll get to the numbers here in just a second. She hastened, she emptied her pitcher into the trough, and then she ran again, and I would say again and again and again and again and again to draw water, and she drew for all his camels. Now the man looked steadfastly upon her, holding his peace. This is probably, he's probably sitting there going, wow. Okay, that's about it. Holding his peace to know whether or not Yahuwah has made his journey prosperous or not. It came to pass, as the camels were finally done drinking, that the man took a golden ring, half a shekel in weight, and 2 bracelets for her hands of 10 shekels weight of gold. He just is going to give her a whole lot of gold. And he said, whose daughter are you, tell me, I pray you? Is there room in your father's house for us to lodge? And she said unto him, I am the daughter of Betuel, son of Milcah, whom she bore unto Nahor. And moreover, she said to him, we got all kinds of stuff. We got straw and provender, enough and a room to lodge in. So he's fixed up. The man bowed his head, and he prostrated himself before Yahuwah. I bet he gives thanks at this point. And he said, blessed be Yahuwah, the Elohim of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his mercy and his truth toward my master. As for me, Yahuwah has led me in the way to the very house of my master's brethren. I guess by now he knew the names. And the damsel ran. She told her mother's house, according to these words. And Rivka, it said, had a brother. We're going to know this name pretty well. His name was Laban. Laban ran out of the house, unto the man, unto the fountain. I guess probably he got the word that he had a lot of gold. It came to pass, when he saw the ring and the bracelets upon his sister's hands, and when he heard the words of Rivka his sister, saying, "Thus spoke the man unto me," that he came to the man. Behold, he stood by the camels at the fountain, and he said, "Hey, come on in, you blessed of Yahuwah. Wherefore are you standing outside? Because I have cleared the house, and we've made room for the camels." So, lots of hospitality. Man came into the house. He ungirded the camels, gave straw and provender for his camels, water to wash his feet and the feet of the men that were with him. And then there was set food before him to eat. And he said, "Look, I'd love to, but I'm not going to eat until I have told you my mission, my errand." And the response, "Oh yeah, speak on." And he said, now this is the first thing out of his mouth, "I am Abraham's servant." Now let's pause. Because I'm going to suggest to you that everything about the rest of the story here falls into this concept. It's a proof text. It is an indication, a story, a precedent for what does it mean, not just to be a good and faithful servant, but the bigger concept, what does it mean to come in the name of the master? Literally, what we're going to see is he carries with him not just the proof that he has this power, but he has the authority vested in him by his master to come in his name. And that literally means to make a binding contract as if it was Abraham himself who was sitting there. That is what it means to have power of attorney or agency, or to come in the name of, in the Hebrew understanding. Literally, to have power of attorney, to be the agent acting for someone else. "Yahuwah has blessed my master greatly," he said. "He has become great. He has given him flocks and herds, silver and gold, manservants and maidservants, camels and asses. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old." Now, I suspect pretty strongly, Nahor knew at least part of this story. He certainly knew who Sarah was. And he's thinking, "Oh, yeah, okay. While Laban wasn't around at the time, he has probably heard the story too. Not he's hearing it or, you know, around this time. So, Sarah, my master's wife, bore him a son when he was old. And unto him he has given all that he has." So the son is going to be wealthy. "My master made me swear, saying, 'You shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I dwell. But instead, you will go to my father's house, to my kin, take a wife for my son.' And here he is. And I said to my master, 'Wait a minute, suppose a woman won't come with me?' And he said to me, 'The Yahuwah, before whom I will walk, he will send his Malach with you and prosper your way, and you shall indeed take a wife for my son of my kin out of my father's house. And then you shall be clear from my oath when you come to my kin, and if they don't give her to you, then you're clear from my oath.'" So he's telling them all of this. "So it came to pass this day, I came unto the fountain, and I said, 'O Yahuwah, Elohim of my master Abraham, if now you prosper my way in which I go, behold, here I am, standing by this fountain of water. Let it come to pass that the maiden that comes forth to draw, and to whom I say, give me, I pray you, a little water from your pitcher to drink, that she will say to me, I tell you what, both you and also I will draw for your camels. Let the same be the woman whom Yahuwah has appointed for my master's son." In other words, to be my master's son's wife. "Behold, I have just barely finished speaking, and here comes Rivka, out with her pitcher on her shoulder. She went down to the fountain, and she drew, and I said unto her, 'Let me drink, I pray you.' And she made haste, and she let down her pitcher from her shoulder. She said, 'Drink, and I will go give water to your camels too.' So I drank, and she made the camels drink also." Now, I mentioned here the numbers. And bottom line is, camels, especially after a journey in the desert here, he's got 10 camels. They probably drink something like 14 gallons apiece. Okay, 14 gallons of water. Remember, a gallon of water weighs about 8 pounds. So that's about 120 pounds of water, maybe a little less, per camel. And he's got 10 camels. So she drew and carried somewhere on the order over half a ton, about 1,100 pounds worth of water. That's one industrious and strong young lady. And, you know, how many times does she have to go back carrying that many pounds of water? 8 or 10 trips at least, probably one trip per camel, and that's if she's got a big pitcher. So I asked her, and I said, whose daughter are you? And she said, daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore unto him. And I put the ring upon her nose and the bracelets on her hands. And I bowed my head, prostrated myself before Yahuwah, and blessed Yahuwah, Elohim of my master Abraham, who has led me in the right way, right here, to take my master's brother's daughter for his son. Now, if you will deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me. And if not, tell me that too, that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. So then Laban and Bethuel answered, and they said, this thing comes from Yahuwah. We can't speak for you, good or bad. Behold, here's Rivka. She's before you. Take her and go, and let her be your master's son's wife, as Yahuwah has spoken. Now, notice as of yet, we've not been told that the young lady has weighed in. Although, obviously, there's been some time passed, the unnamed servant, may have tipped her off. She's probably aware something is going on. I suspect she has a pretty good clue. But it is Laban here who is basically given an answer. We're going to see, though, that is not enough. So it came to pass, when Abraham's servant heard their words, he bowed himself down to the earth and unto Yahuwah. And the servant brought forth jewels of silver and jewels of gold and clothing, and he gave them to Rivka. He also gave her brother and her mother various precious things. So he's lavishing gifts here. And they ate and they drank, he and the men that were with him. They tarried all night long. They rose up in the morning, and he said, all right, time to go. Send me away to my master. And her brother and her mother said, well, let the damsel stay here with us for a few days, you know, a week or so, at least maybe 10 days. Then, after that, she shall go. So here's the first chink in the ointment. And then he says to them, look, delay me not, seeing that Yahuwah has prospered my way. He's anxious to get on the road, and besides, why not go while the iron is hot, right? Strike while the iron is hot. Don't wait around. Things can change. Right now, they're looking real good. So send me on the way. Seeing Yahuwah has prospered my way, send me away that I can go back to my master. And they said, well, look, we'll call the damsel, we'll call her Rivka, and we'll see what she says. Inquire at her mouth. So they did. They called Rivka. They said unto her, will you go with this man? And she said, I will go. Now, I've got that one highlighted, and I will suggest to you that this is another element, right? It is contract law. We've just seen the primary example. Here is another one. Essentially, there has been offer. Will you come? Would she like to be my master's son's wife? And Laban has given his response, so that hurdle is cleared. And then Rivka says, I will go. She has assented. She has heard the offer. She responds, acceptance. So they sent away Rivka, their sister, along with her nurse and Abraham's servant and his men. So I will contend that at least metaphorically, that when she got on the camel, the deal was done. Actually, when she says, I will go, then she follows it up with the action to indicate that her words were true, the contract is sealed. Now, at this moment, from the time that Rivka is headed out and headed back south, she is the master's son's, Isaac's, in other words, wife. Although there has been no consummation. You would say she is betrothed at this point. And as we know, Scripture is real clear. Had somebody tried to take her, that would have been adultery. So she is wife in all but the final consummation. So they sent her away. They blessed Rivka. They said unto her, our sister, be thou the mother of thousands, of 10,000s, and let thy seed possess the gates of those who hate them. So here's the blessing. Rivka arose and her damsels, and they rode upon the camels, and they followed the man. The servant took Rivka and went on his way. So, takes a while to get there, and all of a sudden we get towards the end of the chapter, and we switch the scene. Here is Isaac. He came from the way of Be'er Lahai-Roi, for he dwelt in the land of the south. So the well there that we know the name of, the well of Lahai-Roi. He dwelt south. And Isaac went out to meditate in the field at evening time. And he lifts up his eyes and, whoa, look, there it is. Here comes the caravan. He saw the camels were coming. Now, meanwhile, Rivka lifts up her eyes. And when she saw Isaac, she alighted from off the camel. And she said unto the servant, Hey, what man is this that's walking in the field out to meet us? And the servant says, Now notice the way he responds, It is my master. So he sees Isaac as his master as well, although he is not the one who sent him. He's the one on whose behalf he was sent. So she took her veil, she covered herself, and then the servant told Isaac all the things that he's done. So he gets the story. And then we see this. Now, I will contend that if you're looking for a succinct one-verse summary of how a marriage is consummated, it's right here. And I can't help but think everything in Scripture is important, including the ordering of the words. So listen to the ordering of the words. So Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took her, lechak, that literally means he consummated the marriage. He took her physically as his wife, and it says she became his wife. So, there's a betrothal. He takes her into the tent. He takes her. They physically become one flesh, and she became his wife. And that would be enough. That tells us what we need to know about how a marriage is consummated and what makes the deal. But I think it's really interesting to see the next thing that happens. And it says, and he loved her. Didn't say he took her because he loved her. Didn't say he looked for all these women and he found one that he thought he could love. And then all these things happened. It says he took her into his mother's tent. He took her. Then she became his wife. And then he loved her. And furthermore, it says, Isaac was comforted for his mother. So again, order is fascinating. And now we have seen an example of contract, offer and acceptance, with the money of the merchant, the silver that is involved. And then furthermore, we get another example of a contract. But more than that, this is a contract of marriage. And it's sealed with this act of becoming one flesh. And then we've also seen in the story what it means to be a good and faithful servant, and the whole concept of agency and going in the power of attorney and therefore in the name of. You could say, in other words, that the unnamed servant, he didn't need a name because he came in the name of his master, Abraham. And that is key. All right, so we see then chapter 25 is the final portion, chapter in the Parsha. So it says, Abraham took another wife. Her name was Keturah. And lots of speculation about who Keturah was. There's even some speculation that maybe this was Hagar by another name, but question is why. It would not be unprecedented that she might have a different name, but certainly sounds like it also is equally, if not more likely. I mean, if you figure the number of women involved, probably it's a lot more likely she's different. And her name was Keturah. She bore him several children. This is children of his, not just his old age, but his old age. So Abraham is still fertile, well into his second century. She bore him Zimran, and Yokshan, and Medan, and Midian, and Ishbak, and Shulah. So not just one, not two, but half a dozen. And Yokshan begat Sheba and Dedan, so two grandsons. And the sons of Dedan, Ashurim, and Ledushim, and Leumim, there we go. And the sons of Midian, remember the Midianites, Ephah, Epher, Hanok, Abidah, and Eldaah. All these were the children of Keturah. So children did she have in abundance, and grandchildren, and even great-grandchildren. Abraham then gave all that he has, it says, unto Yitzhak. But the sons of the concubines that Abraham had, he gave gifts. So it sounds like not only did he have Keturah, he had others, because he uses the plural here, concubines, and he gave them gifts. They had sons too. He sent them away from Isaac his son, where he lived, eastward to the east country. And these, it says, are the days of the years of Abraham's life, which he lived, 175 years. So he lived 75 full years after Yitzhak. And then Abraham expired and died in a good old age, an old man, full of years. He was gathered to his people. And Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, buried him, where else? In the cave of Machpelah, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, which is before Mamre. The field which Abraham purchased from the children of Heth, there was Abraham buried, along with Sarah his wife. And it came to pass, after the death of Abraham, that Elohim blessed Isaac, his son, and Isaac dwelt by that well, by the well that was called Be'er Lahai Roy. And with that, folks, the Torah portion ends, and we're going to, at this point, continue the story, essentially, with the son who now has a wife, the son of promise.